Okay. I wanted to talk talk today a little bit about about Tisha B'Av. A little over 2 weeks ago, we started a period that's not in the halacha as Bein HaMitzarim, but commonly called the 3 weeks. And if you take a look at the way that the halacha works, so to speak, during the 3 weeks, starting with Shavuot B'Tammuz, and then as we started Rosh Chodesh Av, called the 9 days, and then it will begin on Sunday, Shavuot Shechal Bo Tisha B'Av, and then Erev Tisha B'Av, and Tisha B'Av, we see a very interesting phenomena, and that is that the closer we get to Tisha B'Av, the more intense our avelus becomes, our mourning becomes. The 3 weeks have a certain low-level avelut. Beginning with Rosh Chodesh Av, it increases more. Beginning with Shavuot Shechal Bo Tisha B'Av is a higher level. And then when we get to Erev Tisha B'Av, and of course Tisha B'Av itself, it's the most intense. Now the reason that that's very interesting is because if you take a look at the halachas involving avelus of a mourner, of somebody who's lost a close relative, the avelus works exactly in the opposite direction. The most intense avelut that there is the immediate avelut. Person's an onen, and then he's sitting shiva. The first 3 days of shiva are more intense than the others, and then after shiva, it lessens somewhat, and we get to a somewhat lower level of avelus during shloshim. And after shloshim, a person who's in avelut for a parent goes on for the next 11 months, is even a lower level of avelut. So it works in the opposite direction. Why is that? So many point out, that once in this name of Rav Soloveitchik, but I don't think it's only his idea. There's a very clear distinction between avelus yeshana and avelus chadasha, between old avelus and new avelus. Our avelus on the Churban is old avelus. We've been doing it for many, many centuries. Avelus chadasha, new avelus, is when a person has just lost a very close relative. When you're dealing with avelus chadasha, so the sense of loss is very intense, and the halacha reflects that sense of loss. The most intense time, as soon as it happens, you're so distraught, you don't know how life is going to go on, how your own life is going to go on. But time heals wounds to some extent, and after Shiva, you begin to face reality, and after Shloshim, it's a little bit less, and during the next 11 months, it's even less so. You never totally get over the loss, but you learn to deal with it. So the halachas of Avelut decrease in intensity because our sense of loss decreases somewhat. Avelus Yeshana, halacha realizes we have a big problem. Because we lost the Beis Hamikdash, and we're suffering from Churban and Golus for hundreds of years, we're so used to it that we forget what it's about. And therefore, the halacha here isn't meant to reflect our feelings, but more to direct our feelings. It'll start us off on the low level of Avelut. And gradually, as we get closer and closer to Tisha B'Av, it will increase our sense of Avelut, because as we get closer to Tisha B'Av, we should begin to feel more this loss that we've had for so many centuries that, unfortunately, we get too used to during the year. So we'll be discussing today, B'ezrat Hashem, the halachos of Tisha B'Av. We'll start off a little bit about Erev Tisha B'Av, and then Tisha B'Av itself. On Erev Tisha B'Av, there is a meal that is called the Seuda Mafseket. It's the final meal before Tisha B'Av itself. We eat a Seuda Mafseket twice during the year. We eat one on Erev Tisha B'Av, and we eat one on Erev Yom Kippur. But the nature of the meals are very, very different. The Erev Yom Kippur meal is a very festive meal. Right? People, you often sit at the dining room table, People very often have a challah, even though it's not a Yom Tov. And you eat a very festive meal. Sometimes you may already be dressed for Yom Kippur, if that's the occasion. The Suda Maseket of Erev Tisha B'Av is almost in the exact opposite direction. It's a Suda that is in commemoration of the Churban. Our custom is, after much discussion amongst the Rishonim, is that we generally eat a fairly large, regular meal, obviously no meat and no wine, because it's during the 9 days. We eat in the afternoon, mid-afternoon, before we daven mincha. After this regular meal, we will daven mincha. And then, in the late afternoon, sometime after mincha, we will eat this meal of mourning. In this Suda Maseket, one is not allowed to have more than one cooked item. You can't eat two different kinds of cooked items. You can only have one. The custom is that we have bread, a hard-boiled egg, and we have water to drink. There is a custom to dip either the bread or the egg in ashes, two different customs that are quoted. It doesn't have to be a tremendous amount of ashes, but to give a little bit of a sour taste, I guess, or I don't know what, an ash taste, as a reminder of the Churban. If one despises eggs, you don't have to eat the hard-boiled egg. But in general, it's a very simple meal. You can drink a lot of water. It may be very advisable to drink a lot of water. In fact, it's advisable to drink a lot of water all day long in Erev Tisha B'Av. Someone told me just now, Finney mentioned to me earlier that it's supposed to be very hot on Tisha B'Av, so to hydrate yourself. But we generally have a very, very simple meal. We eat the meal sitting on the ground, or very close to the ground, as if it was Tisha B'Av itself. We don't eat together in a group. We don't have a zimun. Everyone is eating to themselves. However, the fast hasn't begun yet. You don't have to have changed into your Tisha B'Av shoes yet. When the fast is over, when the meal is over, you can still have something else to drink. You can still brush your teeth. You can still wash your face. All this is allowed until sunset. But the meal itself is it's a very somber meal. And one should pay close attention and special kavana during Birkat HaMazon, as we should all year long, especially in this meal when we get to the third bracha, Brachem Hashem Elokeinu al Yisrael Amecha, al Yushalayim Yirecha, one should have special kavana in the bracha of Brachem. The fast begins officially at sunset. I didn't check the exact time, but it's approximately, there's a calendar in the office, 7:44, 7:45, sometime around then is when the fast begins, and if you're not sure if your watch is that accurate, you should stop a couple of minutes beforehand. Once the fast begins, there are a number of things that are prohibited, that we're all aware of. Primarily, one is not allowed to eat or drink anything during the fast. Let's assume we're talking about healthy people, Be'ezrat Hashem, everyone here should be healthy. And therefore, anybody who is healthy and is over the age of, in his bat mitzvah, is required to fast. As opposed to some of the other fasts where we're somewhat more lenient, fasting, and this doesn't apply to anybody in this room, to the best of my knowledge, fasting on Tisha B'Av applies also to pregnant women and to nursing women, as long as they don't feel any particular weakness. Obviously, Be'ezrat Hashem, in the future, you should be faced with these questions about fasting on Tisha B'Av if you're pregnant or nursing. But if you have a special situation, you should always make sure to ask a shayla. But in general, the Gemara says that, assuming that all else is well, even pregnant and fasting women should fast on Tisha B'Av. A woman who recently gave birth, for the first 7 days, within a week after giving birth, so then they were not required to fast. After 7 days, especially amongst Ashkenazim, again, assuming that the woman is... has recovered, there wasn't a C-section, it was a natural birth, and she's not especially weak, so she should fast. But again, if there's a situation where you feel unusually weak, or you're anticipating it, you should always make sure to ask a shayla ahead of time. A person who is sick, and one does not have to be deathly ill, you don't have to be a chola sheyesh bel sakana, it can be a person who's sick, you're running a fever, you're in bed with a fever, or whatever else it might be, So even if it's not dangerously ill, is not required to fast on Tisha B'Av. And as opposed to Yom Kippur, when even if you're sick and you're allowed to eat, you have to eat very small amounts of food spread out over a period of time, that's not the halach on Tisha B'Av. If a person is sick on Tisha B'Av, legitimately sick, then you can eat regular food. You can't have ice cream with whipped cream and sprinkles on top. You can't eat meat, you can't drink wine, but otherwise you can eat. Again, if a person has any special situation, they're required to take medication or the likes, it's always a good idea to check ahead of time, not Tisha B'Av morning and not 7 o'clock Tisha B'Av, Erev Tisha B'Av in the afternoon. But if you know that you're on medication that needs to be taken, you should check ahead of time to find out what you're allowed to do. Sometimes you can consult with the doctor or the pharmacist. You might find out that that if you skip a day, it's not a bad idea. It's not a problem. Sometimes if you skip a day, it's a terrible problem. So you have to know what the situation is. That's in terms of eating and drinking. Yes. Well, Tisha B'Av is not as strict as Yom Kippur. Then you can, if your medical situation is the same, right, then if you were allowed to do this on Yom Kippur, you certainly would be allowed to do it on Tisha B'Av. If you were allowed to do it on Asara B'Tevet, it might not be allowed on Tisha B'Av. And if you weren't allowed on Yom Kippur, it could be you might be allowed on Tisha B'Av. So, but if you were allowed to take the medication on Yom Kippur and your medical situation is more or less basically the same, then you certainly would be allowed to do it on Tisha B'Av. Okay, the next issue, and that is one is not allowed to do any unnecessary bathing or washing on Tisha B'Av. And on Tisha B'Av itself, we're quite strict as to what's considered necessary. And therefore, in the morning when you wake up, and every morning we wash Mekilat Yadayim, normally the halacha requires us to wash till the wrist, the whole hand including the palm till the wrist. On Tisha B'Av morning, one washes only until the end of the knuckle. Well, maybe the Chazon Ish, that you don't have to sit there with a medicine dropper to make sure that not a single drop of water goes a quarter of a millimeter past your knuckle. But basically, when you're washing, you should be more or less careful. As you go to the knuckles, if a little bit dribbles below, don't worry about it. But your aim for the knuckles and to the fingertips, and not below the knuckles, down to the area of the wrist. The same thing applies when one's coming out of the bathroom. Normally we wash till the wrist. When you come out of the bathroom, you only wash to the end of the knuckles. Don't forget to wash your thumb also. Sometimes when you pay attention to the knuckles, you forget Mr. Thumb over here. Right? So don't forget to wash there as well. If a person's hands are dirty because you fell in the mud, or you got, you touched something that was dirty, you're changing a diaper, whatever it is, then you're obviously allowed to wash that part off. If you don't need soap to clean your hands, then don't use it. If you need soap to clean your hands, use it. I remember many, many, many years ago, I was in the summer camp during the summer, and it was night of Tisha B'Av, and I was walking back to the part of campus that was far away, and somebody was driving by in the car, and I said, save me a 5-minute walk. It's little Tisha B'Av gets what's known in Israel as a tramp or to hitchhike, or somebody from the camp. So to drive, save me 5 minutes walking. And sure enough, about 30 seconds after I got into the car, a person got a flat tire. It took me 20 minutes to help change the flat tire. By the time I got back to my bunk, my hands were black, right? So and with greasy black. So I had to sit and wash with soap to get it off. Right? There was no, there wasn't much of a choice. And that's what you're allowed to do. In the mornings, after you wash and feel like you're dying and your hands are not soaking wet, but they're still a little bit damp, you can rub your eyes to remove the sand, as it's called, from your eyes, to clean it out. In terms of washing your mouth, one should not do so on Tisha B'Av, which would include brushing your teeth, using mouthwash, etc. If a person has great tzar, there's some sort of pain in their teeth or whatever it is, then one would be allowed to wash as long as one's absolutely careful not to swallow. But under normal circumstances, we don't wash out our mouths. One exception to washing is that a kala, who's within 30 days after her marriage, is allowed to wash her face on Tisha B'Av morning.
so she should look appropriate. You know, they're newlyweds, they would have to be a little bit careful about certain things. So she'd be allowed to wash her face.
Ointments, sicha, is also aser. Anything that's put on for pleasure or beauty, cosmetics, etc., is not allowed. However, if you're putting on some cream because of medicinal purposes, you have a little bit of a wound of sorts or a cut, and you want to put on some antibacterial cream or the like, so that would be allowed, right? Because that's for medicinal purposes, not such for beauty or for pleasure. If you want to use deodorant in order to prevent you from perspiring, so then you'd be allowed to. If you want to put on perfume to smell nice, then you're not allowed to. If you want to put on bug spray to keep the bugs off, you would be allowed to. So that's basically, if it's for beauty, for pleasure, for enjoyment, no. If it's for medicinal purposes or very practical purposes, you shouldn't sweat, you should be bitten by mosquitoes, then you would be allowed to. Shoes. One doesn't wear leather shoes on Tisha B'Av. It's very important to make sure now, if you haven't done so already, that you have appropriate Tisha B'Av shoes. It's not a good idea to, I thought I packed it, I could have sworn I packed it, and you know, here it is, the fast is beginning in 3.5 minutes, and you have nothing to wear, and you have to walk, you know, 10 blocks to go to shul. So you should check ahead of time, which is like now, to make sure that you have appropriate shoes for Tisha B'Av. Leather shoes, even shoes that are only partially leather, are not allowed. Our custom is anything, I guess. Crocs are very common these days. I guess that's a good thing to do. Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva that if a person realizes during the 9 days that they don't have appropriate shoes for Tisha B'Av, that even though normally we don't buy new clothing during Tisha B'Av, one's allowed to buy Tisha B'Av shoes that are appropriate for Tisha B'Av during this time. So that's again to make sure, and this, by the way, applies also to slippers. So for instance, if you have your regular Tisha B'Av shoes, but you have slippers that you wear around the house, around the door, in your dorm room, and there's leather on them, so you can't wear them Tisha B'Av night. Right? Find something else when you get up in the morning or when you go to sleep at night to be wearing on your feet. And finally, Tashmish Amita, marital relations are also asur on Tisha B'Av. Those are the five main items that one is prohibited from on Tisha B'Av. In addition, there are a number of other prohibitions and customs that we have on Tisha B'Av. When you're very little, one of the first things that you learn, right, is you're not supposed to learn on Tisha B'Av. Because the pasuk in Tehillim says, Pikudei Hashem Yisharim Samchei Leiv, mit Torah learning is enjoyment. You're not supposed to learn. So I remember when I was even younger in the summer camp, right? You couldn't learn on Tisha B'Av. You could read comic books, you could read silly magazines, you could read any novel you wanted to, you could read everything and anything. The only thing you couldn't read was Torah, because Torah gives you pleasure. So it's a little bit twisted, yes, in what's going on here. You're not supposed to be involved in something that gives you pleasure. So that's the reason you're not supposed to learn. I think it's the Aruch HaShulchan who asked, so how come we don't teach even little kids? Little kids don't really like learning as much as adults like yourselves do. So how come we refrain? So he says, even though the little kid thinks he doesn't like learning, his neshama really is enjoying it. So we don't do it. On the other hand, that's not an excuse to go ahead and start reading the comics on Tisha B'Av, because I'm not supposed to learn. One is supposed to be involved to a great extent, as much as possible, in thinking about things that are somber, serious, mourningful. And therefore, the halacha, you'll find there are many different things that one is allowed to learn about matters of Avelut, to learn Megillat Eicha, to learn Medrashim about the Churban, to learn sections from Yirmiyahu, which deal with Peronos, which the terrible tragedies that would happen,
to learn Sefer Iyov, which deals with personal tragedy. And modern-day Poskimites, that to read stories, books about, whether it's about the Churban of 2,000 years ago, or about the Churban of the 20th century, about the Shoah, about pogroms, about things along those lines, then one would be allowed to, and that's a fairly appropriate reading on Tisha B'Av. So we have, we must have some, certainly have some Sfarim here, and some English books that would be appropriate, Holocaust literature, to be appropriate for Tisha B'Av. I don't remember what, I think there's To Vanquish the Dragon, which doesn't have a cover, so if you see a book without a cover, I think that's it. Some of that is just, I think Go My Son, parts of it have to deal with to do with the Holocaust and the rule of it. You have to take a look to see what's there that's appropriate. And again, there are Midrashim and other things, say for Gilas Eicha, that's appropriate to learn. There's a discussion amongst the Poskim, can I learn Sifrei Musar? Believe me, if it's a choice between reading the comics and Sifrei Musar, it's much better to read the Sifrei Musar than it is to read the comics. And certainly learning some area of Torah is certainly better than sitting around schmoozing about silly things on Tisha B'Av. As much as possible, we should concentrate our day about thinking about things of mourning. Of course, some people feel the need to take a nap on Tisha B'Av afternoon simply because they get headaches, otherwise they're fasting, it's a long day, but it's not an idea to sleep the entire day. I mean, that's not the goal of Tisha B'Av. On Tisha B'Av, we also, and this is one halacha that is not a 24-hour halacha, almost everything else that we've mentioned is night and day on Tisha B'Av. Here there's one halacha that doesn't last for the 24 hours, and that's sitting on the floor or close to the floor on Tisha B'Av. This halacha applies only until Chatzot, midday on Tisha B'Av day. So it's on Tisha B'Av night, and Tisha B'Av morning until Chatzot. Chatzot is approximately a quarter to one that we sit on the floor, even in shul, or we sit close to the floor, you sit on top of the pillow. Same thing applies to night of Tisha B'Av. It also applies to in your dorm room. Right? You don't necessarily sit on your bed if you're talking to your friend. If you're sitting and reading something, right? You should really sit on the floor or on a low space. Of course, there are times people do have to sit. You're getting changed. You're putting on your Tisha B'Av shoes. You need to tie them. So you need to sit down on something. If you're traveling by car or by bus somewhere, you're not required to stand up the whole time or to sit in the floor of the car, especially if you're the driver. It might look a little awkward. then in those circumstances, if for some reason you're flying on Tisha B'Av, you're sitting on a plane, so then you sit on a regular seat. But when you're just sitting around until Chatzot, one sits on the floor. If you have medical issues, you have a bad back, or pregnant women who may find it very difficult to sit on the floor, or elderly people, then you can sit on a regular chair. If you can sit on a low chair as opposed to a regular chair, but even though it's not that low, so that would be a little bit better. But otherwise, if you don't have to, sitting on the floor is meant as a sign of avelut. It's not meant to cause you pain. And therefore, if it's painful, physically painful for you, then you can sit regularly. One should try to avoid going to work on Tisha B'Av. It's very interesting that the Rambam, if you take a look at the language of the Rambam, he talks about going to work on Tisha B'Av and going to work on Purim, about trying to avoid both of them, and that if you don't, in two separate places, one won't see brach in one's work if you engage work on Tisha B'Av and on Purim. The question is, why use a similar language? And the answer is because it's really a similar idea. On Tisha B'Av, you're supposed to be very, very sad. And on Purim, you're supposed to be very, very happy. If you're involved in your work, you won't think about the sadness of Tisha B'Av, and you also won't be thinking about the happiness of Purim. And therefore, one should try to avoid work, not because it's a Yom Tov, like it's a Nisar Malacha. It's the kind of work that will take your mind off of Tisha B'Av, or on Purim, the kind of work that takes your mind off of Purim, that should be avoided. There's no problem turning on lights, or lighting fires, or doing the lamed tes melachot that we have on Shabbos, those are certainly allowed on Tisha B'Av. But like going to work, or you know, if you're home, I don't know, painting a room, or I don't know, sitting around polishing the silver on Tisha B'Av, or whatever it is, things that distract you are the things that should be avoided. If it's going to cause you a monetary loss, you're going to be fired from your job, you're going to be docked a day's pay. So then you can, if you need to, so then you can. But if a person can avoid going to work, so as much as possible, one should try to avoid going to work. Yeah. Again, I remember in various summer camp settings or whatever it is, especially with the with younger children, you have to occupy them somehow or another. So there are different things that a person can go and watch. You know, if it's a Holocaust-related movie or something along those lines, depending on who the person is. Right, then you see what's appropriate. There's certain things that may be age-appropriate for younger kids that, you know, older people should maybe avoid. On the other hand, what's extremely popular in the States has become, and possibly in England as well, I'm not sure, the Chofetz Chaim Heritage Foundation arranges, has a video in which they usually have two excellent lecturers speak about in Yonei Dioma, in Chuban, and about Shmiras HaLashon, etc., has become extremely, extremely popular, and I think that for most people, you know, it's very, very worthwhile. You know, not everybody's going to be able to sit down all day long and learn Eov, right, the whole day, and you know, feel the sadness of tragedy, etc. And the Askan of many Rabbanim, so they have these videos. Which and I've seen a number of them. They usually have excellent speakers, and I think it's very moving. Part of the idea of we'll talk about that a little later. Okay, but you know, on television, you know, to watch the news, which is terrible anyway, anyhow. But you know, the news is distracting. You to go onto the internet and to Google all over the place on Tisha B'Av. Is distracting you from the avelus. That's really not what you should be doing. I guess if you want to, I don't know what kind of Holocaust literature on the internet, you want to read it off the internet, I guess you could, if you don't have anything in your library.
I'm considering reading one of the Jewish history, and a couple of books, but it's far concerning.
So Jewish history, which concerns Churban, pogroms, Holocaust, Inquisition, etc., there's a lot of that, unfortunately. So that would be appropriate to read by the better times. I don't know. If you want to read about the history of Hasidut, not exactly the best time to do so. But if it's a choice between reading the history of Hasidut and reading the comics, so better read the history of Hasidut. Yeah.
Could you read that myself and anything that were...
I would think so, because in order to, one can't appreciate the loss unless one knows what was. If you don't understand what was so special about the Beit HaMikdash, how can you appreciate what the fact that we don't have one? So I think that would be appropriate. But when you're reading about this, you should internalize the fact that look what we had and look what we're missing. Okay. One does not... Yes.
I have like a certain summer because I had talked about like Islamic persecution against women to go to a certain country, like Afghanistan.
I'm not so sure that's so Tisha B'Av related. That's true, but part of our depression should be concentrated on our Jewish situation, our personal situation. Okay, one is not allowed to greet people in normal, cheerful greetings that one does the rest of the year. So saying to a person, Shalom Aleichem, Aleichem Shalom, would be Asar on Tisha B'Av. The same thing for Boker Tov, Laila Tov, good morning, good day, good night, good evening, have a good day. It's not a good day. It's not. Right. So one greets the Safa Rafa in a very muted type of greeting. Regarding saying, let's say, hello, sometimes if the phone rings, so there are different ways to say hello. There's ways to say hello or hi, and you could also say hello. Sometimes when you answer the phone, when you say hello, hello just means someone picked up the phone on the other end, what do you want? That's what hello, when you pick up the phone, right, that's what it means. So you don't say, hi, how are you? That's part of the reason why you should not go to the hotel on Tisha B'Av night, unless you go, let's say, I guess, midnight or 1 o'clock and no one's there. It's probably one of the poorest, I wouldn't say poorest, one of the places you should try to avoid on the early evening of Tisha B'Av is the hotel, because it's a big social scene. Hi! Oh, it's Tisha B'Av. Hi. So if you want to go very, very late, I mean, I don't know if you're allowed to go, I don't know what the story is, you know, if you go 12, 1 o'clock in, you know, in the morning, midnight, 1 o'clock, I don't know, if you want to go there, so then that's maybe a more appropriate time. Some people go in the evenings preceding Tisha B'Av, late at night, you're in Chatzot, people saying Tikkun Chatzot, although that has also become like the in thing to do, so it's like, it's a problem. So it's hard to feel the morning when, you know, just so many people you haven't seen in a long time are at the Koto, yeah. Yeah, we'll talk about that. What's normally part of davening, you can say. One also avoids giving presents on Tisha B'Av, because presents are a way of Sheila Shalom. Is a similar halacha that when a person is an avel, is a mourner, you also don't give them presents. So you don't give a person presents on Tisha B'Av. Regarding jewelry, so there aren't any very specific halachas. Obviously, I don't think anybody would all of a sudden start putting on their Shabbos and Yom Tov jewelry on Tisha B'Av. That would just totally be inappropriate. In terms of regular jewelry, there is no prohibition to wear regular weekday jewelry that, you know, a woman wears during the week. So she could wear it on Tisha B'Av itself. She could. However, some quote that there's a custom to minimize even that, and possibly aside from, let's say, a wedding band that a woman never takes, a married woman may never take off, you know, will always wear, but other even weekday kinds of jewelry, there's also have a custom not to wear it on Tisha B'Av. One should avoid tiyulim, taking nice strolls on Tisha B'Av. Anything that really is meant to be a distraction, you know, my little kids are bored, what am I supposed to do? Give me something to do that's a distraction. As we get older, so we should try to avoid being distracted. We should really be thinking about Shoah. Now, it's hard to sit there and meditate the whole time about Korban, but again, if you read the learning appropriate things, appropriate literature to read, if there's a lecture, you know, the Chabad Chaim Heritage Foundation lecture series or something along those lines that are appropriate, so then that's what you should be doing on Tisha B'Av, yeah. You can, if you're learning appropriate things, because it runs fresh air, that's fine. If you go outside to play, you know, a game of poker, would on any day of the year, would not be appropriate. Yes. Older? Gold jewelry. Oh, gold, no. Gold is only a problem, according to some, on Yom Kippur, because it's a reminder of the Chet HaEgel. Right? And on Yom Kippur, the Egel is the Egel HaZahav. On Yom Kippur, HaKadosh Baruch Hu finally says, Salachti Kidvarecha. So we don't want to do any reminders of the Chet HaEgel. So for those who have a custom not to wear gold jewelry. But that would only be on, to the best of my knowledge, on Yom Kippur, on Tisha B'Av, not that I saw. I don't think gold is necessarily a problem. Yes?
Can you bake
on Tisha B'Av? You can prepare food on Tisha B'Av for what's necessary either to feed younger children who are not fasting, or to make sure that there's food in the house for people to break their fast on Motzei Tisha B'Av. But to bake on Tisha B'Av, because just for the sake of baking, you're basically doing it because you're bored and it's a distraction, and that's not the most appropriate thing to be doing. You're doing it, because why do you bake? What am I supposed to do? It's a long afternoon, I need something to do, so I'll do this, and that will take my mind off of whatever it is. Okay. I think somebody's honking their horn. Okay. Now, yes. I didn't mention it. There is a requirement a little bit that one should try to lessen one's comfort in sleeping, but not to the extent that it won't allow me to fall asleep. We're not trying to keep people tossing and turning all night long. So they say that people who sleep with two pillows should sleep with one pillow. If you find that you can sleep without any pillows, but if you find that you're tossing and turning half the night, so then, take your pillow. Some have a custom, it's not required, that they would sleep on the floor, but most people can't fall asleep so much on the floor. Some people take their mattress and put it on the floor. So there are those who have such a custom, and it's fine, but it's not a mandatory custom. Sometimes there isn't room to put all the mattresses that you want to on the floor. Yeah?
Is that discomfort less only for the hospital, sitting on the floor bed, or is that discomfort when you take a nap during the day at 3, 4 o'clock? Is that...
It's a good question. I'm not sure. It might only apply to the night. I don't apply to the night. Okay. Regarding davening, a few special things about the davening. First of all, on Tisha B'Av night, there'll be Tfilat Arvit. Certain customs you'll notice in the shul, they remove the parochet, the curtain on the Aron Kodesh is removed. People, of course, will be sitting on the floor. You don't have as many lights on. It's not as light, and they have fewer lights. Some places use only candles. In camp, we used to tell the campus to bring flashlights with them or something. So it's not as festive in terms of the lights. And we will read Eicha, followed by a few keynotes, not so many. You might notice here in Eretz Yisrael, many shuls, not all shuls, have a custom, according to the Minhag Agra, to actually read Eicha from an official cloth, parchment, like Megillat Esther is read, and if they do, they will recite the bracha before, and Asher Kedushanu B'Mitzvotav, V'Tzivanu Al-Mikra Megillah. Some shuls in Eretz Yisrael have such a custom, not all shuls have. You can follow along in your printed Eicha, and then we say some keynote. Shabbos morning. Tisha B'Av morning is pretty much a regular davening. According to many opinions, most opinions, you can say all the regular brachot that one says. Any parts of davening that are normally part of there, even if it's a Mishnah from somewhere, or Psukim, but if they're normally said as part of davening, it's not considered Talmud Torah, and you can... And you can say them. You'll notice that in the minhag, certainly amongst Ashkenazim and even many Sfaradim, is that the men do not wear a talis and tefillin on Tisha B'Av morning. Instead, they'll put it on by mincha, which is unusual. Yes? There are some who have such a custom also on Tisha B'Av, but not everybody agrees to that, especially nowadays that we wear Tisha B'Av shoes and not walking around barefoot. It's based on the idea of walking around barefoot. So, if you have a custom not to say, you cannot have it. In Mincha, and then we will have a special Kriyat HaTorah in Shacharit, followed by lengthy keynote. The halacha says that one should try to finish saying kinot by approximately noon. And therefore, we usually don't start davening so early in the morning, unless you normally daven vatikin. Otherwise, you daven a little bit later, still making zman kriyat shema, zman tefila, and then kinot are said till approximately chatzot. But it has become very fashionable in many, many shuls, something that Soloveitchik has been doing many, many decades ago, was to have the Rav or somebody explain various keynotes. Instead of just reading the keynotes, reading and reading and reading and reading and basically not understanding what we're saying, so a keynote is read, an explanation and background, and put it into context, and that's very often done. I don't know what's happening here with keynotes. Preparing different ones. Some say all the keynotes, some say some of the keynotes. There are a number of translations of the keynote that are out. Probably the most famous one these days is the Artscroll translation, which gives not only a translation, but a little bit of a description and a background to the keynote, which can hopefully put it into context. It's very hard. The keynote in a very difficult language. Some of them talk to us. Some of them seem to be this foreign tongue that we don't quite know what's going on. But keynotes are written over many, many centuries. Rabbi Elazar HaKalir is probably the most famous Paitan who wrote many of the keynotes. We have those from Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi. We have famous ones from my Rabbi Rutenberg, Shali Sufra Be'esh, and others. In more recent times, there have been a number of keynotes written about the Shoah. There's one well-known by Rav Schwab, Zatzal, who's the Rav of the German Jewish community in Washington Heights. He himself was able to leave Germany before the beginning of World War II. And he wrote a very, very moving keynote about the Rebbe. Zatzal wrote one. I think it's very appropriate that the Shoah be commemorated as well. One has to draw a fine line between, you don't want Tisha B'Av to turn into Yom HaShoah, and the only thing that you talk about is the Shoah. On the other hand, when Tisha B'Av is a mention of many tragedies which happened, you shouldn't ignore probably the most recent, tremendously calamitous event that happened. So, it's not Yom HaShoah, but the Shoah is appropriate towards, in terms of Tisha B'Av. In Mincha, there are two major additions in Shmona Esrei, and that is Aneinu is added into Shema Koleinu, which we do on every fast day, and there's one paragraph which is added into the bracha of the Yerushalayim Ircha, paragraph beginning Nachem, which we add into Mincha. Sfaradim actually say it by all the tefillot, Ashkenazim say it only by Mincha, which laments the sorry state of Yerushalayim and the Makam HaMikdash, and ends off with the bracha of Baruch Hashem Menachem Tzion Uvonu Yerushalayim, because we hope to have Nechama. We don't say Avinu Malkeinu, which we usually do on other fast days, and we don't say Tachanun. Strangely enough, Tisha B'Av has this Moed aspect to it, because it eventually become a very happy day. So even though it's tremendous Avelos, that's a little bit of the Moed. We don't say certain things. The fast is over approximately, you can read the calendar, I think it's approximately 8:12 in the evening, earlier than it would be in New York or in London, so that's an advantage. However, certain things continue until noon on Asiri Ba'av, 10th day. We don't eat meat or drink wine until noontime on Asiri Ba'av, which may be a problem with check about lunch on Wednesday. And many folks can write that the custom is to refrain from those activities which were done during the 9 days. One refrains from doing them until noon on Asir Ba'av. Unless there's an overriding reason, you have to get ready for Shabbos, which is not the situation this year. When Tisha B'Av is on a Thursday, so then they're ready for certain things. So then anything that was normally avoided during the 9 days, we continue to avoid until Chatzot of Asiri Ba'av, and unless there's an overriding reason to do otherwise. Yeah. Correct.
So we're going on Shiloh before the time we can make sure you know everything. Let's get everything as dirty as we need it for the show.
What?
I have to bring it anyway.
Oh, okay. If there was a situation, they say Letzarach Gadol, you might. Depends on how important that item is.
That's
how important that item is. Okay. So whatever you did during the 9 days would be appropriate. Was whatever. It's not Tisha B'Av, it's continued. 9 days are continued.
So minimal showering, but we have a garden.
Right, whatever was done. I'll just I'll end up with one story. If there's any other. The Beis Halevi, Yoshua Ben Soloveitchik, the great grandfather of Soloveitchik from Yeshiva University, Beis Halevi was once approached by a delegation from the city of Brisk, and they asked him to become the Rav of the city. Beis Halevi wasn't really interested, and he told them no. And I said, no, he's not interested. A while later, the delegation again came from the city of Brisk with a letter signed by the heads of the household, etc., of the Jewish households in Brisk, came in begging and pleading Yeshua to become the Rav of the city. And they told him, they said, Rebbe, 20,000 Jews, 20,000 Jews are waiting for you. Please come. So the Beis Halevi said, how can I keep 20,000 Jews waiting? Wouldn't be right. What can I do? So he reluctantly agreed to become the Rav of the city of Brisk. Many years later, someone told over the story to the Chafetz Chaim. Chafetz Chaim heard the story, he started to cry. So he asked him, he said, Rebbe, it's not such a sad story. Why are you crying? I don't understand. Rebbe's right, I don't understand. He says, do you think that the Beis Halevi is the greater Baal HaRachamim than Melech HaMashiach? Don't you think Melech HaMashiach has as much Rachamim as the Beis Halevi? Yeah. So the Beis Halevi said he couldn't keep 20,000 Jews waiting, so he came. So why hasn't Melech HaMashiach come? The answer must be, says the Chafetz Chaim, that there really aren't 20,000 Jews who are truly waiting for Melech HaMashiach to come. Because if there were, it would have come. That's the story. And sometimes I think that the Chafetz Chaim, as sad as it is to say, sometimes I wonder if there isn't a great deal of truth to his comment. Not that the Chassid Shalom say anything that's not true. How much are we really waiting for Melech HaMashiach to come? And how much would we look upon the arrival of Melech HaMashiach to be this really, really nice thing, but somewhat inconvenient in terms of my personal life right now? I remember, when I was living in Chutz Laaretz, it's terrible, I should admit it, but Melech HaMashiach would come, it would be great and wonderful. It's going to be hard selling my house, because everyone's going to be selling the house. Value's going to start going down, all the Jews, right? It's not going to be easy finding something in Eretz to sell now, because everybody's going to want to be buying. The price is going to go skyrocketing. And I'm going to have to quit my job right now. I don't know what kind of job I'm going to get there. I'm going to have to uproot my family. So it'd be wonderful if Melech HaMashiach would come, but maybe it's not exactly the right time for it. No. I'm planning to come in Aliyah, once I get to come in Aliyah, I'll settle, I'll have my own house, then it'll be a good time for him to come, right? How much of that, sometimes in the back of our mind, it's really so. Many years ago I heard a tape, Mashkiach from some yeshiva, I don't remember where, saying he was speaking to a fairly wealthy Jew who lived in Chutzlaritz, this very large house, mansion, like, fancy cars, everything. The person asked him, point blank, he said, what would you do if Melech HaMashiach would come right now? Just go to Eretz Yisrael, give it all up. What would you do? And the man answered him, tongue-in-cheek, but only slightly, he said. So the rabbi said with a smile, we're Jews, we've lived through many, many difficult times in our history. Somehow or another, I'll make it through that as well. Mm-hmm. Joking, but it was. How much do we really, really want? Because until we really, really want, why should HaKadosh Baruch Hu really send him? Part of what we need to do on Tisha B'Av is to realize the tremendous loss that we have. We disconnected from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. A million school children here in Eretz Yisrael probably can't say the Pasuk Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. Don't know what it is. Assimilation in Chutz Laaretz is rampant. The intermarriage and the sense of security that we have here just isn't. If we're not worried about terrorism from within the country, you read them one day, open up the newspaper, and they're talking about Chas v'Shalom, possible war with Syria. And if it's not a war with Syria, it's that the Hezbollah is rearmed to the extent that they were before last summer's war. And if it's not them, it's the Iranians who are building a nuclear bomb, and it should be ready in a number in a short period of time. And if it's not this, it's about, rising anti-Semitism in Europe, in France, in England, and who knows what. So our situation is far from being good. There's only one ultimate solution. We need to really, really want. And that's part of what the challenge is. All the past Tisha B'Av and this Tisha B'Av are. It's for us to not to work on, well, what can I do to possibly just pass the day through? But what can I do on Tisha B'Av that when Asiri B'Av comes along, I'll be a slightly different person. I won't be the same, maybe slightly apathetic person that I was beforehand. Tisha B'Av should have meaning past the fact that I made it through the day. And if we're zochet to do that, as I'll tell us, kol ha'misabel al Yerushalayim, zochet v'roa b'vinyana.